Coming up, it's another episode of Breakfast with the Beats. First, Mike and I each give one player that fantasy baseball managers should go out of their way to add before their price is increased because of an impending trade. Then, in our beat writer roundup, we discuss Shohei Ohtani's injuries before diving deep into what both the Reds and the Marlins should do at the trade deadline. After that, we go over pitchers with innings concerns, analyze the home and road schedules of certain teams, discuss the impact of doubleheaders, and then figure out what to do with high-profile struggling players. Finally, in our mental health moment, we discuss the fragile nature of confidence in our professional lives. All of this and more in a loaded episode of Breakfast with the Beats, which is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. But before all of that, a quick word.
Good morning, fantasy baseball friends and family. It's your old pal Mike Carter back here with you again for episode 17 of Breakfast with the Beats. Dave and I are coming to you on Friday morning. I have a busy weekend again, and Dave has accommodated me once again to allow us to record on Friday so that I don't have to lug my microphone around with me tomorrow when we're out and about doing family things. Dave, good morning. How are you this fine day?
I am doing great. It is Friday morning. It's beautiful outside. We're talking baseball. Like, no complaints. Like, come on.
Well, do you want to complain about your pitching staff?
There's not enough time if I start getting into that. pitching is, how do I say it nicely?
it's family not show, Dave.
It's not good, but it's not good for anyone. So we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, I do take some solace in knowing that too. You know, as I was lamenting to you before we hit the record button, some of you guys that listen might know that I'm in Tout Wars. I'm in the mixed auction draft. And this past week, I had to make some decisions. When you pick somebody up in that league, they have to play that week. You cannot just stash them on your bench. So this past week, my pitching is so desperate that my big acquisition this week was Seth Lugo. And I had to put him in the roster as a starter. The one part that of my pitching staff that's good there is my bullpen. I've got Duran, I've got Lats, I've got Grant Taylor. So I've been getting some really nice support there, but my starting pitching has been a bit of a black hole this year. So in my ultimate wisdom, because, you know, I'm so good at fantasy baseball, I decided to start Lugo and bench Noah Cameron, who ended up going almost to a perfect game yesterday. 8 scoreless innings yesterday, giving up 1 hit, striking out 7 on my bench. I'm hopeful that Seth Lugo will be able to do something for me this weekend, but I'm not super hopeful, if you can hear the laughter in my voice already.
Isn't that always the case of my year there? It doesn't matter what you do, what informed decision you make. Like, you could have the best reasoning behind it, all the data supporting it, and then something like that happens. It's just, we love this game.
I do. And I always kind of come back to that idea that it's the strategy and the conundrum that I find myself in that I actually rather enjoy. And I know that might make me seem like a distorted or disjointed type person, but I do enjoy the challenge of it. At the end of the day, you have to laugh at it because it is just kind of funny, you know, like the whole no good deed goes unpunished type of mantra comes through here with that. But all right, Dave, we're going to put our pitching staffs aside and get into the show here. Wanted to start off with a question like we do every week. And this was one that I have been really going back and forth on all week. You know, the trade deadline is looming here. We're about 4 days away from the trade deadline. August 3rd at 6 p.m. Eastern time is the trade deadline. And I wanted to ask you, with that deadline approaching, name a player that fantasy managers should be actively buying now in anticipation of an opportunity arising before Monday's deadline. So that could mean a guy that's replacing somebody who gets traded, or a prospect potentially that gets traded to another team and gets an opportunity. Who do you got, Dave?
I think I've got the most obvious answer here, but I'm going to go with it anyways. And it's Cade Anderson. It's known that Seattle is really trying to trade away either Luis Castillo or Emerson Hancock, or both if they could. I feel like they would trade away Castillo first, mm-hmm. simply because of his performance, but he makes a lot of money and not a lot of people are going to want to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to trade away Emerson Hancock. It's almost like found money with him. And they need someone to replace him. And right now, Cade Anderson, he's been tearing it up in the minor leagues. He looks like the real deal. The only issue right now is his rookie eligibility. I feel like the Mariners might want to wait just a little bit more. I think if it's in the middle of August sometime, you know, he'll retain that prospect eligibility. And next year, if he wins Rookie of the Year, they can get an extra draft pick. So I think they might wait until then to ensure that that door is at least open next year. Mm-hmm. But man, he looks really good right now. He looks like the real deal. And I'd be adding him now if I could, in anticipation of just inserting him in my lineup for the last 6 weeks of the season.
I wonder if there's any possibility that the Mariners would trade both Castillo and Hancock.
Like in one trade or
in two different trades. They're kind of a weird team to me, you know. Like I think that they're a good team, but there's always seems to be a piece that's missing there. Especially offensively, I guess I would say.
Yeah, they've been like obviously Cal Raleigh has been terrible. Julio's been off and on injured. They've got some pieces there. They just don't have the timing for all of it to come together. There's still time left in the season because it's the American League and anyone's
right
got a chance, but they're a weird team to be actively looking to sell, you know, two pieces of their rotation while still competing. It's a weird situation.
I see a lot of teams like that this year though, too, you know, with the American League being so wide open and National League, I guess, is to an extent as well. You know, there are two dozen teams that think that they have a stake in the playoffs. And so you could see a combination of both types of strategies there, right? Where you're buying and you're selling a little bit at the same time. You know, the Nationals are another team that kind of come up with that because CJ Abrams' name is getting tossed around quite a bit. I'm guessing the cost to get him would be exorbitant, but the point being that they could do both. They could add and they could also sell.
And that's actually the ultimate way, I think, in fantasy, specifically with Dynasty, if you can do that, if you could sell while also buy, I think that's the ultimate strategy. You know, maybe you're still competing, but you're cutting salary for next year. You're mm-hmm. helping yourself now and later. That's the ultimate strategy, I think, in Dynasty. If you can somehow do that, you've mastered the game.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. The answer that I had for this question, with all due respect to Max Clark, who has been called up and is going to play today for Detroit, the problem that I have with Clark is I don't know exactly where he's going to hit in that lineup, and I don't know exactly what the playing time is going to look like. They've got a number of different guys that are vying for playing time there, including Javier Baez, who just came off the IL this week, and I think he had 5 hits in his first 2 games back. So he's looking like he's going to kind of pick up where he was starting to at the beginning of the season. My answer for this is James Tibbs. And speaking of Dynasty, I do have him in a Dynasty league. And so I've been kind of waiting patiently for him to get the call. I think that the Dodgers have just way too many prospects. And you and I have kind of talked about this before, Dave, that, you know, Tibbs is a guy that would probably be a top 3 prospect in most organizations. And the Dodgers, he's not even top 5. He's currently ranked as the 9th best prospect in their organization. He seems like he's really another success story. You know, kind of came out of nowhere, was part of the Devers trade, and now he's landed with the Dodgers. But what I really like that he's done this year is he's cut the K rate. He's gone from 31% K rate to a 23.5% K rate. He's also got that dual eligibility that I love in players at first base and outfield. And the power is just absolutely massive. I mean, it is high-grade power. What we would refer to back in the day as light tower power, you know, so you know, he could get an opportunity. It won't be in LA, it doesn't look like, but he could be a prospect that could get moved in a trade. Say, for example, you know, if the Dodgers do the unthinkable and add another ace in Skubal, you know, Tibbs could be a guy that's on his way back to Detroit for that. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's always an interesting time. If you're a fantasy player, really be watching the trade deadline and see A, which prospects get moved, or B, which prospects might get promoted into a place where they get some playing time if a player moves in that absence. Dave, let's get into the beat writer roundup for this week. And there were a lot of very interesting articles this week that we could have picked from. Many of them have to do with this idea of the trade deadline. But the one that you and I both agreed on that we wanted to discuss here on the show was Fabian Ardaya's article in the New York Times and The Athletic about Shohei Ohtani. And I know that we've talked about Ohtani a lot, and we've brought him up before, but the discussion points in here really discussed the idea of Ohtani pitching. And what we learned this week was that he has a bit of a biceps issue besides the knee issue that we already knew about. Talk a little bit about what was in that article.
Yeah, so the article from The Athletic is called Shohei Ohtani, Still Facing Uncertain Pitching Timeline, says biceps is also an issue. And it just got into what's been going on with Ohtani. It's his lingering knee issue going on, but it's also his right bicep. He's got some discomfort there, and it's not getting better. Now, he hasn't actually pitched since July 3rd. And he has, the last time he was on the mound, he threw, I think it was a bullpen on July 22nd. Now, he's only going to try and pitch again or prepare to pitch again when everything is 100%. And he was even quoted as saying, if it's 90%, I'm not going to try. So it has to be near perfect for him to actually, you know, pick up a ball and throw it. What's interesting about this is that it was made note that he will be in the lineup every single day, regardless of how he feels, because they need him hitting. And there really won't be a chance for his body to heal and catch up. Mm-hmm. Now, we're recording this on Friday morning. Last night, he actually missed a game because of letting his body heal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something, you know, not extra, but more significant that we're not known about here other than, you know, discomfort. So we'll have to see tonight if he actually plays tonight. But right now with regards to pitching, he's going to need a full rebuild. It's almost at the point now where he hasn't picked up a ball. He's going to need a full rebuild, like out of spring. For fantasy, it's going to be really tough to count on him for the rest of the season because of how much buildup he's going to need. I don't know if the Dodgers are working on getting him ready for the playoffs to pitch, or if they want to just, you know, leave him as a hitter and just let everyone else who they've hired and, you know, brought on the team to be pitching. One other interesting note is that he hasn't really stolen a base. Mm-hmm. He hasn't attempted a steal since May 22nd, and he hasn't stolen a base since May 16th. His hitting is okay. It's usually better when he doesn't pitch, but it's about the same as it was. So overall, it's a really interesting case right now. He is hurt. He's hurting, and his body needs a chance to heal. I think it just depends on whether the Dodgers and Ohtani want to actually pitch again this season and be a dual player, or if they should just focus on the hitting and, you know, let that ride into the playoffs.
I think the Dodgers are just always such a special situation. You know, you look at what they have happening there and the number of pitchers that they have and the volume that they can throw at you when they get to the playoffs, right? They're going to follow the same philosophy that they did last year, which is we're going to take our top three starting pitchers, whoever they might be at that time, and we're going to use those guys. The rest of them will be available in the bullpen. So you have a situation in which they have Yoshi Yamamoto, who was fantastic, obviously, last year and was the MVP of the World Series. They have Sheehan. They have Robleski. Lauer pitched really well last night, even though I know that he's not a super palatable name to use in a playoff game. Sasaki has been good the last month or so. He's prone to blowups. His command, as you and I have discussed, is not always great. But they're also waiting to get back Blake Snell. They're also waiting to get back Tyler Glasnow. There doesn't seem to be any reason to push on Ohtani pitching at this point because he's just so valuable as a hitter. They really need him atop of that lineup. And as you and I have discussed a number of times, Dave, and I feel really comfortable discussing this with you and also taking criticism from people who are listening, I personally think Ohtani should be done with pitching. He's a 32-year-old guy who's done both things at a very high level, at a level never seen before. And to me, he's far more valuable as a hitter than he is as a pitcher, especially in the context of the Dodgers. I told you last year in the wintertime that I felt like his next arm injury would be the last one and that he would not pitch anymore. And I think that it's time to give that up. Now, you might look at it in a different way and say, well, if you needed him in a short three-inning burst in the playoffs, would you use him? But the Dodgers are going to have a stacked bullpen. You know, if they decide not to use guys like Robleski and Lauer in their rotation for the playoffs, those guys would go to the bullpen, in which they have Alex Vesia, they've got Evan Phillips, Tanner Scott now will be bumped down into a setup role. Edwin Diaz is back as closer. They've got a lot of octane they can throw at you in that bullpen. You know, my best guess right now is if they got to the playoffs, which they will, that and they have health, they'd have Yamamoto, Glasnow, Snell, and Sheehan, and the rest of the guys would probably be filling in bullpen spots.
Or Scooble.
or Scooble. There you have it, right? Oh, my gosh. No kidding. It would be kind of wild. Anyway, yeah, that's our Diaz article. It was a really, really great piece, I thought, talking about the trials and tribulations of Ohtani and what to do with him. And next, go ahead.
Well, just one last thing. It's weird, too, because if they were to just give him 10 days off to heal, to get better, they are, right now they have a 12-game lead on the Diamondbacks. They won without Ohtani last night against a capable Seattle team. Mm-hmm. If you can even go 6-4 over the next 10 days, you're still doing fine. And then you get Ohtani back. Maybe his bicep is feeling better. Maybe his knee feels better where he can actually start running. And if he's not a pitcher anymore, he might do some more of that. It feels like a preemptive, proactive. Let's just give him some rest right now, get him ready. And then for the last 6 or 7 weeks of the playoff, before the playoffs, he's full blown. And then he's ready for the playoffs.
I wonder if some of that with him is on him, honestly, where he just doesn't want to come out.
I think so. I think a lot. I think he has a lot of say in what is done with him and around the team. And I think he really just wanted to win a Cy Young this year for his legacy. But at the end of the day, if it's not working, you gotta figure out what will work. And I don't know. I feel like just listening to your body and resting for 10 days, let the team do their thing.
When I tell you, I would like to listen to my body and give myself a rest for 10 days. Ain't happening, folks. Ain't happening. School year ramps up in a week here. So we're back at it. Shifting gears from that article, we have another good one about the trade deadline and a team that definitely appears to be in the market as sellers, which is the Cincinnati Reds. And C. Trent Rosecrans wrote an article this week about some trade candidates that the Reds have that could be interesting people to add in the right context for teams. And he talked a little bit about players that would be good buys, players that could be sells. Out of the people that were listed in there, Dave, if you could give us a quick summary of the guys mentioned in there and then who your favorite listed on there was.
Yeah, so he listed, okay, so it's called Checking In on the Reds Trade Pieces Ahead of the Deadline. It's on The Athletic as well. So he said, here, look at some of the players that are probably going to be on the market. So we've got Tyler Stevenson, J.J. Blade, Nathaniel Lowe, Eugenio Suarez, Brady Singer, Brock Burke, Caleb Ferguson, and Pierce Johnson. So it's a long list of players here that if the Reds decide to really strip it down, they could trade away a lot of key pieces of their current roster, but build for the future. Mm-hmm. And that's typically what a team like the Reds in a small market probably would want to do, because what they have right now really isn't working. My favorite piece to be traded here out of all of them is Tyler Stevenson, actually. I think the time is right for that because there are some teams out there that could really use a catcher right now. Mm-hmm. Your White Sox.
Yes, sir.
The Yankees, the Rays. And if the Padres decide that they're competing, he'd fit really well in there. He's also a free agent after this year, and he was burned in the offseason with, I remember it was an arbitration hearing, and they fought over a very small amount of money, which really could leave a bad taste in the mouth of a player who really doesn't feel as if he's welcomed or wanted. Mm-hmm. I'd like to really see him have a chance with a new team. I think he's capable offensively. He's battled some injuries over the years, but I think he's someone that could really help a contender down the stretch and in the playoffs. And if he were to go to one of those four teams I mentioned, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I've been kind of championing here in Chicago. You know, the White Sox are kind of in a weird spot too. The young team that's overperforming a little bit at this point. And I thought, you know, a nice trade for them would be getting Brady Singer and Tyler Stevenson if they were able to do so, depending on what the prospect take back would be. Although I know Singer is also on an expiring contract, but the White Sox really do need desperate help behind home plate. It's been, for somebody who's a fan, it's not been real fun to watch the work back there, but the Reds are kind of in a tough spot. What would you do with Hunter Green there?
So he's one who was not on this list, which actually surprised me.
Yeah.
I really think they should explore a trade of him simply because he makes a lot of money compared to other players on the team. He's had his share of injuries over the years, but he's healthy now. And I think he's done enough in his career to show that he could bring in a haul. So if you could trade him away for either a few top prospects and, you know, the next Hunter Green, I think you really should look into that because, as good as he is on the field, I think his value to a team that's looking to rebuild would be better served via a trade.
Green is a guy that I think it depends on how you kind of look at him, right? I mean, his contract, to your point, is a six-year, $53 million contract that runs through 2028. So he has an option for 2029. So a team getting him would have control of him for a number of years.
Yeah.
He's back now after having been hurt. He's made four starts that have been pretty nondescript, I would say. You know, his ERA is over seven for those four starts, which I know is not necessarily indicative of the type of pitcher that he is. But he's also going to be 27 on August 6th. He's one of my birthday buddies, even though I'm, you know, twice his age, unfortunately. So it could be a move that is made that's kind of flying under the radar right now if somebody thinks that they're maybe getting you know, a propulsive type of ace that can help them right now and then into next year. And he's eminently affordable to teams that are in bigger markets. I mean, $9 million a year, essentially, for a guy of Green's potential caliber is not an exorbitant amount of money to be able to pay for somebody like that. I was surprised when I saw his name starting to get thrown around a little bit there, but nothing surprises me at the trade deadline anymore. You just got to be ready for anything when it comes up.
But that's the thing, though. He doesn't make a lot of money compared for other teams, but for the Reds, it's for them, that's a lot of money, and it's a lot of money on someone who's been injured throughout the years. But he's very affordable for other teams, which is why I'd really explore getting the most I could out of him right now.
All right, Chris Guest, let's get going here on the phones. Let's get Singer, let's get Green, let's get Stevenson, let's do one-stop shopping here. What do you say? Oh, boy. Well, another trade deadline piece that we have to touch on by Ken Rosenthal here, talking about the Marlins at the trade deadline and what their thought process is. Now, the one thing that's kind of following the Marlins around is that they are a 500 team. They're 55-55 as we sit here today. The odds of them making the playoffs at this point are about 15%, according to FanGraphs. So they're kind of in a spot where they have to make a decision about what they're going to do as well. And they have some very, very attractive pieces here. I think we would both agree that could move at the trade deadline. You know, what do you do if you're the Marlins here?
Yeah, so the article is what we're hearing about the Marlins' new deadline strategy and more MLB trade intel. It's kind of a depressing article just because the Marlins, like, they didn't go after any free agents. They didn't spend much money in the offseason. They're doing well. They're succeeding. And after that, it's, oh, we're going to trade all of our best players. Yeah, we're listening to offers here. And I get it. I get it. They're a small market team. They're young players that are succeeding. But these players aren't, like, they're arbitration eligible until 2028. There's a lot of control here. Mm-hmm. This is something that they could actually build. They could actually work towards building something, I don't want to say special, but something like you're building forward here. I don't know if this is considered found money or not, but it's just, you're doing something good. They also mention how they're listening to offers on Peter Fairbanks, Peterson and Bender. And I get those, especially Fairbanks. He's a free agent after this year. He's a veteran. If you want to move on from him, I totally understand that, especially since he makes $13 million and he's going to command more than that next year. But the rest of them, why not just give it a shot, see where this goes, see if you can build upon this next year. You know, doing well like this will attract other free agents to come and maybe even come for less than what they would have because they want to be a part of something special. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's kind of depressing. And it's, I wonder if it's just an underlying, it's just showing us what the real issue is here in baseball, that, you know, you've got high market teams who are able to afford anything and pay for anyone that they want at any time. And then you have a team like this who's succeeding on basically nothing, and they feel the need that they have to trade them away to get more back to maybe compete in another 3 or 4 years.
The part that's fascinating to me here with this group is that it's a pretty young group. I mean, they don't have anybody in their starting nine who's over the age of 28. And they've acquired some of these guys at pretty low prices and have gotten pretty good returns on those things. You could see a situation in which you look at them as a 55 and 55 team at 500 and say, well, you know, this is probably not a real competitive, a deep competitive playoff type team here. So do you do a mixture of both? You know, do you look at trading a guy like Sandy Alcantara, who is, you know, almost 31 and has got a lot of miles on those arms and that arm, I should say. And maybe there's a team that will give you a couple of prospects for Sandy. Do you look at maybe a guy like, you know, Liam Hicks all of a sudden is said to be on the market, but he's a guy that they've got 3 more years of control of. I don't know why you would want to necessarily move those guys unless you are completely blown away by an offer. I mean, if the White Sox come to you and say, we want Liam Hicks to catch and we'll give you Caleb Bonimer, then you have to make that deal. But yeah, that's probably not going to happen is my point. So maybe they do a mixture of both things. The question that I always have with the Marlins is they seem to really be able to develop that young pitching, but then it kind of maxes out. Like they don't have any traction to kind of do more with that. So I think it will be kind of fun to watch over here in the next week or two to see, less than a week now before the trade deadline, to see which guys here could get moved. You know, would there be teams that would be interested in Otto Lopez? Yes. But, you know, he's another one too. You know, he's only 27. He's hitting the prime of his career. By the way, tip of the hat to you on him, because I know you've been a big fan for a long time and is a player that you've really been in on for a long time. But, you know, he's not a free agent until 2030. He's ARB eligible next year. You know, they should not be looking to get rid of guys like that unless they get blown away.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really depressing just because they're finally doing something well, and to give up on them, what does that say to the team? What does that say to the fans, the franchise? It's just, it was a really underwhelming article to read when you think about that in the state of baseball.
It reminds you too of the old days when they had Yelich and Stanton and those guys and then traded them off too when they would seem like they were on the cusp of being a very fun team to watch for a long time, and all of a sudden they bottomed it out again. I think the economic necessities of baseball really, this is a team that's a great microcosm of that as we start talking about whether we're going to even have a season in 2027 and whether there will be a work stoppage. There has to be something that is done to kind of right the wrongs. And I don't know that I trust anybody that's involved in this process to be able to do that in an accurate fashion.
Yeah. And going back to this team too, they showed a lot after losing, was it 12 in a row? They didn't they sweep the Phillies?
They
I think
did.
they swept the Phillies. And with young players, they could have just rolled over and continued the slide and think, no, this is, we're coming back down to earth. No, they went to a division foe and they swept them. And they're back in the hunt here. I think they have something, and I wouldn't give up on it.
I agree with you, and I hope that they don't. I guess we will see what happens in the next few days, won't we?
Yeah.
With that, we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be back right after these words. All right, Dave, we're back. We're in the second half of the show here now after doing our beat writer roundups and getting depressed about teams like the Marlins. Let's talk a little bit about pitching, if we must. It's a bit of a sore spot for me. It makes me a little anxious. I can feel the butterflies in my stomach kind of starting to flutter here as we discuss these things. But let's talk a little bit about innings and how pitchers get used and how you consider that when you're getting ready to make trades. We have a list of some guys to go through. I'm going to turn that over to you and let you kind of lead the discussion on these guys. But it's definitely something that does not get considered very much, it seems like, especially in fantasy, when these ace-type pitchers or guys that we really think can help our teams get moved to other teams.
Yeah, it when you're looking at players for the rest of the season, innings do matter. And something else that I think matters that not a lot of people talk about, it's not just innings, but it's also pitches thrown, because not every inning is created equally. You could throw, an immaculate inning, or you could throw 30 pitches in an inning, and you're getting pulled earlier with the more pitches that you have. So what I did was I went to Savant and I looked at the difference of pitching, of pitchers who've thrown more pitches this year than they did last year in the majors. And I've got nine pitchers listed here. So what I'm going to do is go over each of them with the amount of innings they threw last year and compare it to the amount of innings we have this year so far. And then we'll see if maybe together we can come up with if we're worried about any of these long term, or if it's just, it's just it is what it is. So right now we've got Reed Detmers, who pitched 63 and two-thirds last year, and a lot of that was in relief. Whereas this year he's already at 125 innings. I think with him, I think innings is a bit of a concern, especially for a team who is acquiring him. That being said, I think that whoever does acquire him will have a spot open for him, and I think he's going to be okay for the most part. I think a lot of teams who are going to be going for him, they're going to be competitive and trying to win. But I don't think in the long run that's something to be overly concerned about with him. I'm not sure what you think about him.
Yeah, he's 27. I think he's ready to kind of, get ready to be rolling here. Last year, you're right. He was kind of in between jobs there in the bullpen. I was calling for him to be the closer because I really liked the stuff there. He did pitch in 61 games last year, but only 63 innings. But to your point, he's made all 22 of his starts as scheduled so far this year and has 125 innings. And so there is some concern there, in terms of the added buildup. His career high in innings for the Angels was 148 back in 2023.
I think we're fine with him. I'm not too worried. The next one I have here is Cade Cavalli. Last year, 48.2 innings. This year, 116.2 already. And this is Cavalli coming off of an injury, which took a couple years to come back from. I'd be worried a bit about him. That's a really big jump in innings. I think the Nationals are going to try and compete, but it might get to the point where they might spread out his starts or pull him a little bit early just to conserve as much as they can. So he's someone I would be worried a little bit about down the stretch.
I agree with you on that because I think, here's the weird situation that he's in. With all the injuries that he's incurred, he's 28. He's not a 23-year-old guy that they're looking to preserve. And so Cavalli, I think, is out there for the duration. And I think the other part that I worry about with him is that he throws a lot of pitches because he's not always super efficient. You know, his walk rate isn't bad. It's actually come down quite a bit from what it was before, but he does throw a lot of pitches. And when you get a lot of strikeouts, you have a tendency to throw more pitches, right? So he's had three games this year where he's had a dozen strikeouts or more. And that adds a little bit of a toll there. So I am a little concerned about Cavalli.
Mm-hmm. The next one I have is Michael King, 73.1 last year. Mm-hmm. He's already at 125.1. He does have a history of injuries, so I'd be worried a little bit about him being worked too hard. And if the Padres, you know, they don't compete by the end of the year, they might just shut him down for the last couple of weeks just to conserve things for next year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me too. You know, he's not one of those types of guys that's the high octane type of pitchers, but you know, there are a lot of miles there. He only threw 15 games last year, and like you said, the 73 innings. You know, if you look at the body of work for him, his high watermark in innings has been 173, but we have to remember as well, the first 4 or 5 years that he was in the league, he was not starting games, he was pitching out of the bullpen. And so we're kind of getting into that sort of uncharted territory. He's within 50 innings of his all-time high when he made 30 starts for the Padres back in 24.
I've got Braxton Ashcraft here. Last year, he pitched 69.2 professional or major league innings, but he also pitched 48.1 in the minors. So you add those up together, it's close to around what he's at right now, which is 122.1. With him, I just worry that he's just getting too tired right now, and maybe you can see it in his performance. He's just not where he was. So I wonder if there's fatigue there, or if it's just, I don't know, hitters are figuring him out. Regardless, though, I think they're going to continue using him, just might not be as deep into games as it once was.
Yeah, I think fatigue is definitely setting in there. He's pitched less than five innings. In the last four starts, he's only got 19 innings total. So it looks like the Pirates are kind of in that mode of, you know, maybe trying to preserve him a little bit. I think in redraft leagues, the window to sell him was probably in early June after he had that spectacular May. And you could kind of see read the tea leaves and kind of see this coming. Although the stuff looks really good, the velocity is still up, the chase percentage is out of this world. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. There are some command issues there, and he does appear to be fatigued a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I've got Cam Schlittler, 73 major league innings last year, but he also pitched 73.2 minor league innings. He's already at 136.2, but I don't see him or the Yankees slowing down at all. He's been a stud. He's been an ace. They're trying to get to the playoffs. Now, they do have Rodon coming back, and they do have someone else I can't remember. Clark Schmidt?
Yeah, Clark Schmidt.
Yeah, so maybe they'll spread him out a bit, but regardless, I can't see them pressing the brakes on him.
Now, he shows no signs of slowing down. I mean, the White Sox had no answer for him this week. He had 8 strikeouts. I think he only gave up one hit against them in the game that I was watching. He's terrific. And he's 25. You know, they're going for it. We know that they're going for it. To your point, I could see a scenario where maybe there's a phantom, you know, leg injury or something where they put him on the IL and try to just give him a little bit of a breather. But he also doesn't seem like the type of guy who wants to do that, similar to what we were talking about with Otani earlier in the show. The Yankees would have some options potentially. I think Rodon is throwing either live BP or is facing hitters, I think, this weekend. So he might be on his way back shortly as well.
Yeah, that'll be some good relief for the Yankees.
Yes, for sure.
Here's a big one I have here is Jacob Mizorowski. Last year, he pitched 66 innings, but also 63.1 in the minors. Mm-hmm. This year, he's already at 120.0 innings. They're already stretching his outings out. The time in between outings. They're already trying to find time for him to get some in-season rest. They definitely need him down the stretch, but they also need him in the playoffs. I could see them really not giving him as much time as he probably should on the mound. I could see either shortened outings, or I could see you know, another phantom injury, you know, knee discomfort. He needs 15 days off.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy wise, it's going to be a tough to rely on. On the other hand, though, I mean, he's so good where a short outing could be enough, you know, to help you through your week anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't think he's going to pitch as often, but I still think he's going to be one of the best.
He did last week. I mean, he only threw 5 innings against the Rockies and he struck out 12 guys, and then they took him out. You know, I think that they will shorten those outings. The one thing that's really kind of cool about the Brewers is they have a lot of options that they can use to try to buy guys a little bit of time. You know, right now they are going with a 6-man rotation to try to buy him a little bit of a break and spread out with Henderson and Sproat. Gosser is there. Shane Drohan has been good too, but he's also looking for a little bit of rest. He was supposed to pitch on Wednesday, I think it was, and he's actually pitching tonight against the Angels instead. So they've extended that a little bit. But they've got other guys that they can use to help out there, like Bryce Wilson and Chad Patrick. Now, I'm not saying that they're anywhere near what they get with Mizorowski, but Kyle Harrison should be on his way back at some point with this forearm tightness issue that he has. So they'll have options. I think that they're trying to extend him, like you said, Dave.
Yeah. All right, I got 3 more here. We'll go quickly. Brandon Young, last year, 57.2 professional innings with 33.1 minor. This year, he's already thrown 97.2 major league innings plus 16.2 minor. I could see them – I don't know, actually. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if he's in their long-term plans here or if this is just, like, found money and they let it ride. But whatever they feel about him, I think – He could be not shut down, but miss out on some starts down the stretch.
I don't feel like I have my finger on the pulse of him very well. I have him in several leagues, and I sort of play matchups with him. I don't start him every week, but you know he's 27 as well. And you know, I guess I had thought that the Orioles would have better pitching than what they have at this point. And I look at him and I see, you know, I wonder if he's just kind of a placeholder until they have other options.
Yeah, that's actually, I think that's the best way to put it. He's just there right now.
He's their fifth starter clearly. Right. But
yeah,
he has done fairly well this year for them.
Yeah. And that's what I meant about found money. It's just, oh, look, I found a quarter under the couch. I can do something with it.
Right. Right.
Max Meyer, 64.2 last year, 110 this year. Last year it was because of injuries. I'm not too concerned. I just don't want to see that number get too high because there are always injury concerns when it comes to him.
Yeah, this is his all-time high by quite a bit. I mean, his highest innings total in the major leagues was 64, so he's almost doubled that now as is. Now, granted, he's also laid up right now and getting that break, so I guess we'll have to see how they bring him back and when they bring him back. But he's been fantastic this year. A guy that I was pretty high on coming into the year, and I was looking at as a potential third starter. He's far surpassed my expectations.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, Justin Robleski, 66.2 this year, or sorry, last year, 112.2 this year. I'm not too worried about him, although I think, like, health wise, but I think eventually he's just going to move back into the bullpen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He's been terrific for them this year. He obviously was in the All-Star game. He's got 11 wins. Fastball really couldn't break a pane of glass at this point, but he's working to get outs. It doesn't walk anybody. There's a lot to like there. I do think you're right. I do think that eventually he ends up moving back to the bullpen for sure.
Yeah. I've got a couple other things here before we move on to our other segment about the schedule coming up. I think it's important to note here that when we're making trades and picking up players, and the schedule does matter. Just some quick tidbits. The Rockies have 25 more home games, but they do play the Padres 4 times. So that's something to make note of, that the Padres get to go to Coors for 4 games. The Rockies are on the road for 25 games, and they'll be playing against the Cardinals, the Nationals, the Yankees, and the White Sox. These are the 4 teams that it's their first series after a home series, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the first teams that they play while on the road. And those are typically when the Rockies hitters are at their weakest. So it's something to make note of for those four teams if you're looking to make a trade for a player. The A's, they have 24 home games down the stretch. So keep an eye out on that. For the Astros, play them four times to end the season. So if you have Yordan Alvarez for the final four games, mm-hmm. I think you're doing pretty well.
I would and say then, so.
Yeah. And then the anti home offense place is in Seattle. They have 25 home games left, and they play the Angels four times, but every other team that they face at home is actually a playoff contending team. Now, it's the American League, so there's a lot of contending teams, but it's worth noting that they do have a tough schedule down the stretch. So, and then one last thing is that the remaining doubleheaders, there are five different days with doubleheaders for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to note that the Yankees have two sets of doubleheaders against Boston and then against Tampa. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for, you know, a reliever to maybe get a couple saves, mm-hmm. maybe look to New York. As I mean, Bednar's obviously gone in all your leagues, but if you want to pick the next in command, like Bednar probably won't pitch in both of those games. Correct. There's a chance for an extra save here and there, and sometimes that can mean everything in the standings. So I'd be looking at the Yankees down the stretch, and you and I were talking about how their bullpen has really come through as of late. So
mm-hmm. yeah, you could pick up Paul Blackburn like you did last week
for three minutes.
For 30 minutes.
Like, literally, he gave up those two home runs. I'm going to pick someone else.
Yeah, you ended up dropping him pretty quickly as well. Yeah. Sorry, just a little joke at your expense there, Dave.
That's all right.
No, that's okay. No, but to that point, though, they have had some really good bullpen help there this year. So, yeah, absolutely. Doubleheaders are really important to look at because you might be able to vulture or save somewhere that you weren't expecting, you know, like St. Louis and Cincinnati, you know. Maybe somebody like Jojo Romero, if he's back and healthy and not traded, ends up vulturing a save, or somebody like TJ Antone for Cincinnati vultures a save. There's a number of different options that could happen there, and that could make a difference.
Not just that, too. Offensively, the catcher won't catch for both games.
Correct.
It's one less game that catcher will get any offensive stats for you.
Okay, Dave, I know that this is to hurt me because I have several of these guys on my team, pitchers and some of these hitters as well. But the last segment that we wanted to do before we get to our mental health minute involved several players that we've been on the fence about dropping. And then as a corollary to that, just sort of asking ourselves the question, how do we start these players in leagues in which we're in? The first one that we were going to talk about, again, we talked about him a little bit last week, is Framber Valdez. I have no idea what to do with him.
Yeah, and he was actually the inspiration for this segment because I'm in the same boat as you. I have no idea what to do. Looking at different options and things like that, I was actually listening to The Craft the other day, and they talking about Framber. Eno Saris was saying how Framber looks out of shape. Mm-hmm. He's sweating a lot. His stuff is down. Command is off. The ground ball rate is not where it should be. What he's not doing is throwing the curve, which was interesting because his sinker is bad. It's not a good pitch at all. And he's not establishing himself with that curve. The mm-hmm. curve is his bread and butter. If he can mm-hmm. get that curve going, he can offset it with anything else, but he's not doing that this year. And I don't understand why. And I felt really validated listening to Nick Pollock because he actually said what I've been saying too. It's that I hate putting him out there because I don't know what version of him I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. And I hate the anxiety knowing that I'm starting someone who should be good, but I might get Cy Young, or I might get, I don't know, Delman Young. No, he was a hitter. I don't know. I was trying to make a comparison there, but you just never know who you're going to get. And that's not what you should have with someone who A, you've invested a lot in, and B, who should be better than he is. And I have no idea what to do. I think I'm just benching him until I see him do well. But then again, if I bench him during a good outing, then I've benched him during the one good outing he might have for me over a three-week period.
Yeah, I've been really kind of miffed as well as to what the problem is. I we don't know him, and so it's hard to always say, but I feel like he's got a little bit of an attitude problem. I feel like he's had an attitude problem. What he did last year in Houston still really sticks with me, with purposely hitting his catcher. To me, that's as a baseball coach, that speaks volumes to me about the character of the person that you're working with. But we're not here to talk about character issues. We're here to talk about his performance, which has been putrid. If you look at his Statcast data, the one part that I do find interesting is that it seems like he's having a hard time with the command of the curveball. You know, his walk rate is up this year. His strikeout rate is down. He's not getting as many whiffs as he did before. You're right about the sinker not being a great pitch, but he's throwing it a whopping 57% to lefties and throws it 43% against righties. Now, in July, we did see the curveball usage kind of start to ramp up again a little bit. It was his second most used pitch over the course of the month, over 30%. So maybe he's making a little bit of a course correction. But boy, I would have liked to have seen that course correction in April. He's just having a bad year, you know. And I don't know that I'm going to give him a mulligan either. I mean, this is a pitcher that I rostered as a 1A, 1B, you know, a strategy for me in some leagues that I'm in, thinking, well, I'm not going to get one of the top notch guys, but if I could get Valdez and like Joe Ryan or something like that, I would be pretty happy. That's just not worked out very well for me at all.
Yeah, it's I'm at a loss with him, and I think I might even just take the safe approach and just bench him. You can't drop him, because you drop him, he's going to be picked up by someone else.
Yeah, and then it'll be great. You know, I have him in Tout Wars. That's where I have him, and I have him on the bench right now. I have to see something before I can use him again. And believe me, that's hard to say with the pitching staff that I currently have constructed, because it is absolutely bloated and awful, the pitching staff that I have. Speaking of bloated and awful, another guy that I have on my Tout Wars team, Luis Castillo.
I think with him, the hard part is he's going to pitch no matter where he is. If he stays in Seattle or he gets traded, he's going to pitch. He's going to get out there. But he's not good.
Yeah, I'm done.
At all. Like a 5.06 ERA and a 1.39 whip. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm done. I wanted to give him a chance, and you know, he had a really bad April and a May that wasn't very good either. And then in June, there were some signs that maybe he was kind of coming out of it, you know, pitching in the piggyback role, but then they didn't like the piggyback role. And so, you know, they ended up moving away from that with him and Miller. And he's been starting again, and the results have not been great. You know, post All-Star break, 5 strikeouts in 12 innings, 1.58 whip, 6 ERA. I mean, he's throwing batting practice right now. I have him in Tout. I think this will be the weekend that I get rid of him and try to find somebody else on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I'm done.
Another guy that's on this list for us too, Dave, that I'm a little more on the fence on than the other two, is Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, with him, it's tricky, because he's shown really good outings. Like, he's had really good outings this year, but as of late, it's just been pretty bad. The splitter isn't what it once was, though it's not too bad. I don't know if it's just old age. Mm-hmm. Like, he's getting up there. He's 35. I think he's going to get dealt at the deadline. So maybe, depending on where he goes, another team can unlock something with him. Mm-hmm. You can't trade him. Or sorry, you can't drop him. I think you have to run him out there.
Yeah.
Simply because I think he can be better than he is.
Well, you got to use him. And, you know, part of the problem that he's had, and, you know, in June, he got really bit bad by the home run ball. He gave up 9 home runs in 32 innings, which is ungodly bad. And he's course corrected on that here in July, but he's also given up a lot of walks. And hits and some hard contact. And so you wonder if maybe there's a mechanical thing that's happening there. And to your point, he's, you know, he's a 35-year-old guy who has pitched a lot of innings in the major leagues. You know, he's started over 300 games in the major leagues and has over 2,000 innings stored in that arm. You know, so you wonder if maybe that's catching up. But the guy does take the ball every fifth day, and I think you have to continue to run with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last guy that we had for pitchers on this list is Trey Yesavage. I am a mixed bag on him personally, although I know the results have been pretty decent. What are your thoughts on him?
The one thing that I would say for the most part, I'd run him out there. The scariest part for me, though, is that the walks are climbing. Like he's 11.9% walk rate right now. He had that one game in San Diego where he couldn't hit the plate. San Diego. Yeah. Seven walks in 1.2 innings. I'm a little worried that there could be, you know, part of the yips going on with him right there because he's finding it. It's difficult for him to find the plate, but I think he's talented enough where I think for now, at the very least, you got to run him out there. He did well in his last outing. The splitter is a good pitch. The fastball is pretty good. He's young enough where he can probably put it all together. I don't know if Toronto has the coaching staff to help him do that because it seems like all of their pitching is tanking right now, but I think you got to stick with him.
It's funny to me because at the beginning of the season, people were drooling and oohing and aahing over him and trying to fall over themselves to draft him. And I saw a guy that has a lot of talent. Obviously, we saw that in the playoffs last year, but I think a lot of people overestimated his strikeout ability. He gets a lot of whiff, which is great. He doesn't give up a lot of hard contact, but he's not a guy that is like a high velo 98, 99 mile per hour type of guy, you know, so he's relying a little bit more on finesse and command, which is ironic because I think a lot of people miscast him as a strikeout artist and he's fine with that. I'm not saying that, you know, he's a 24% strikeout average. That's fine. But I think people were looking at him as this next wonder kid of pitching. And I don't know that that's what he really is.
And I think the lesson is let's not focus on the playoffs when we see this. Like he was great in the playoffs. Vladdy was great in the playoffs a couple years ago. Vientos was great in the playoffs. Oops. But playoffs don't translate into regular season success. So let's maybe, you know, this year's playoffs, whoever breaks out, let's not jump ahead and try and, you know, push him up draft boards because he's going to be the next big thing.
Well, it's like we always talk about, that's the tax you pay for the next year, right? It's a, you know, front of memory stuff. Trumps a lot of time what we know about actual performance data. And as drafters, we have to really work on that. Dave, I want to ask you the same thing here quickly with some hitters that we have on the list as well. Mm-hmm. Jaron Duran, who you and I were just talking about off air, what are you going to do with him?
So I looked it up. He's actually the 100th ranked outfielder in terms of WOBA right now with minimum 150 plate appearances. It's not good. It's not good at all. And you could see how frustrated he is. I mean, last night you and I were talking about how he was arguing with Wilson Contreras that he didn't tag up on a fly ball. You don't do that. You can't do that. You have problems with someone. You do that in the dugout after and say, hey, why didn't you do this? Get his perspective on it. Don't call him out in front of everyone. But he's feeling more and more like a one-hit wonder from a couple years ago. I mean, right now, players around him that are more competitive or that, you know, you have to consider, it's like Carson Benj, Evan Carter, Cam Smith, they're all in the same range of doing what Jaron Duran has done. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better.
No, I feel like he had an opportunity maybe to move him right around the All-Star break with people hoping that he might turn it on in the second half. But the metrics are really poor. You know, to your point, the 2024 season, he had .285, hit 21 home runs and stole 34 bases. That appears to be more of the mirage now. He does have 13 home runs and 15 steals, so he's helping you there. But a .195 batting average and a .252 OBP is absolutely killing you. I think you do have to look at moving on from him. Jazz Chisholm Jr., I got a chance to look at him close up this week with the Yankees, and he looks like he's going through the motions to me.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the guy we thought he was going to be back when he was in with the Marlins. He's actually the 210th overall player in terms of WOBA. He was a second-round pick. He was actually my second-round pick, but he was second-round pick in a lot of drafts, and he just – other than some of the counting stats, he hasn't performed at all. And right now you'd actually have to consider, like, who would you rather have, him or Xavier Edwards?
Xavier Edwards.
Him or Bryson Stott?
Probably Stott, but it's close.
And then him or Jackson Holliday?
Jazz. Okay.
But that's where we are right now.
It's you. Yeah.
But that's where we are. He is a second round pick, and now we're contemplating whether or not Bryson Stott would be better than him.
Correct. And I look at him, he left the game yesterday with dehydration. He looked like he was laboring while he was running a couple of games this week. He was also doing a lot of complaining. There was a lot of jabbering around with the umpires and different things. It just struck me as maybe it's a focus issue, but maybe he's also nursing an injury. He does have 16 home runs and 30 stolen bases, but I think most fantasy players were expecting closer to the 31 home runs that he hit last year. Yeah. And it doesn't look like he's going to get there at this point. Next guy, Corbin Carroll. Interesting one to talk about here. You would not think about him not being a super valuable player down the stretch, but what are you seeing with him and what are you thinking about doing with him?
Well, to be honest, I actually just had a change of heart, actually just thinking about him right now. As I'm looking at our show doc, I'm like thinking to myself, maybe I shouldn't be too hard on Corbin Carroll. I mean, he did start the season with the hamate injury, and he's had other, setbacks here and there, but he's 15-15 with a .249 batting average. In all honesty, I want to take away what I was going to say about Corbin Carroll. I think he's fine. He's not necessarily worth the draft pick that you made. So maybe the only thing I would say is maybe for next year, we should. No, maybe not. Maybe not. Because last year, like 31-32, maybe if he's healthy to coming out of the stretch at the beginning, he's back to where he was. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about him?
Well, I think in a 15-team league, obviously you have to stick with him because you drafted him as a centerpiece, right, and you're just hoping that he gets hot. But he had an awful start of July. He hit .169 in July, but after the All-Star break, he's got 2 home runs, and he's also got 5 stolen bases after the All-Star break. And he's hitting only .224, but that's a marked improvement over .169. I'm a little worried about the batting average. He's hitting .249 right now, so you'd like to see that maybe kind of spike up a little bit. But I'm not too worried about him. The weather is getting warmer, and he lives in Arizona, so it's going to be warm all the time there. I'm willing to just kind of ride it out with him at this point.
Yeah, me too.
And the last one on our list here is a guy who has really been disappointing this year, I would say, Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, we all expected him to take that next step, especially when we found out he was playing through an injury last year, but he's not performed at all. He's had some hot stretches as of late, but not enough to really put him over the hump. 18 home runs, 8 stolen bases. That's not too bad. Not great for where he was drafted. .219 batting average, 23.4% K rate. He's actually the 21st shortstop in terms of WOBA right now. I got 2 comparisons for you. Who would you rather have down the stretch? Him or Mookie Betts?
Mookie.
Me too. And him or Dansby Swanson?
I would say I would lean Dansby there, honestly.
That's interesting. I probably would too, but it's funny that that's where we're at right now. It's, Dansby, who looked off, like worse than Gunnar did at the beginning of the season. We'd rather take him right now than we would Gunnar.
Yeah, I think the hard part with Gunnar, it kind of reminds me again of the conversation we had about Vlad Guerrero last week, which is those guys at the back end of the first round, and there was a lot of people last year who were like, I'm happy to wait till the end of the first round and just take one of those guys. And if that was your strategy and if that's what you did, it probably didn't work out real well for you. The back end of the first round is really going to face a lot of scrutiny this year, It's going to be really fun to watch, I think, over the winter to see how that ends up playing out for folks. But yeah, Gunnar has been a disappointment. Dansby, even though he's hitting about the same as Gunnar Henderson, has 16 home runs and 15 stolen bases. Yeah. Kyle, by the way, Kyle, if you're listening, I'm coming for my $5. Dansby's going to hit 25 home runs, I still believe. Okay. We're going to take our last ad break and we're going to come back with our mental health moment. All right, we are a little bit over time. You know, we always promised to be done in an hour, and we're a little bit over that this time. We're an hour and five, but want to make sure that we make time for our mental health moment. And one of the things that Dave and I talk about a lot in our text thread is confidence, and confidence in our work, both in our work that we do for a living and also in our work with the podcast and with writing as much as we do. Dave and I together write almost 10 articles a week, I think, for different websites. And so we're constantly busy with those things in our free time. So, Dave, I wanted to ask you, you know, as men, we're kind of taught, you know, explicitly to not exude supreme confidence a lot of time. And then sometimes when we do, it comes across as overconfidence and maybe a little bit of a braggadocio attitude that we don't want to have around too many other people. How confident are you in your work, whether that be at school, when you're working with the kids, or when you're doing your fantasy baseball writing or the show?
When it comes to my work at school, I'm pretty confident. I mean, I've been doing it for, I've been teaching kindergarten for about 15, 16 years now. And I kind of know how to do it. And it'll be interesting this year. I'm going to be working with a new partner for half the year. So letting that confidence come out, mm-hmm. And just believing in myself and what I know works and doesn't work. When it comes to, excuse me, fantasy and, you know, podcasting and stuff, I'd say that's still a work in progress for me. I'm always, I never want to feel like I know everything. Mm-hmm. I never want to feel like I'm not open to somebody, you know, not criticizing, but just saying, no, you were wrong about this, or don't forget about this part and things like that. Even when we're on here, I always have, if you could see my screen, it's just notes after notes after notes. I want to make sure I don't forget anything. So I'm always willing to add to those notes, make those notes, and just be sure that I will say everything and get it all correct. I think what's important when you're confident in it, it's just not humble about it, but just you don't let people know that you're confident, and, mm-hmm. and you don't, mm-hmm. you're not putting your chest out like this just because you're right about something. It's, you know, I'm right, you're wrong. That's not the way to do it. I think that's important. But yeah, overall, I'm pretty confident at school, and when it comes to fantasy, I'm getting there with fantasy and podcasting.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have going for us both, and I agree with you about being confident with work, is that there's this kind of saying that I use on a daily basis with my staff and with myself, essentially, more than anything. It says, you know, about authenticity, about when if you're real with people, you don't always have to be right. And I think that goes a long way, both in the fantasy baseball world and in my real work as well, right? The idea that, you know, I'm very confident when it comes to my work, and I'm still going to make mistakes. I know that, but I don't second guess myself about a lot of things anymore. And as a younger man, I did. I would always second guess decisions that I made in the classroom, decisions that I made administratively. When I leave work at the end of the day, I leave work. I don't drag it around with me anymore. And that can be really hard to do in a lot of fields of work. And in education, it's really hard because you're working with other people's kids, and I'm working with other people's, you know, mentally ill kids who are struggling with a lot of different concepts and different things that go into being in school. And so it's common nature to kind of do that and question yourself. But I really have tried to double down on being home with family when I'm there and kind of living where my feet are in that moment, if that makes sense. When it comes to fantasy baseball, I'm plagued by self-doubt a lot of the time. You know, I love strategy. I love learning. I love continuing to kind of mull things over I think my biggest issue is that I just play in too many leagues because I have a hard time saying no. I think if I could get it down to 3 or 4 leagues and I could really focus on it, I would perform better instead of like the 11 or 12 that I'm in right now, which is just a couple too many for me. I think that I've gotten pretty good at drafting again. Like I feel like I at the draft table, I'm pretty confident. It's the in-season management and strategy that I need to continue to work on. And quite honestly, being on the podcast with you and getting feedback from other people on the show really helps me refine that strategy and think more deeply about what it is that I should be doing. And so I really want to be able to learn how to mitigate my mistakes to be able to compete in deeper leagues. And it's also sort of what I'm trying to do in real life, right? Which is mitigate the mistakes enough that I can be competitive in the aspects of life that I really want to be competitive in. Dave, anything you want to add to that?
Just my quote of the week. It's from my favorite player, and I think, I don't know if he was one of yours, but it's Ken Griffey Jr. said, "Confidence is how you go about your business. Cocky is when you have to explain it to somebody."
It reminds me a lot of what Michael Jordan said about, you know, when you're good at something, people will let you know. You don't have to let other people know.
Yeah.
That's really true. Very true. Yeah. Well, Dave, that's a great quote to end the show on. I hope you have a great weekend. Happy Friday to you and yours. I hope you guys have a terrific day and weekend. For those of you listening, thank you again for listening and giving us an hour of your time each week. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe where you get your podcasts. And also, if you give us a like, we'd be most appreciative of that. We will be back with you next week where we will have a lot more clarity about how things are going to play out. The trade deadline will have passed by the next time we meet. Until then, have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves. Be well. Peace.